This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from BFM 89.9. I'm Meera Sivasudhi. Now, after 8 years on the air, we're bringing the Bigger Pictures Health and Living to you, live, on the ground. A whole day with the experts, debunking myths behind heart disease and diabetes, addressing our love affair with food, and of course, George will be there talking about sperm. So join us at BFM's Health and Living Live 2016 on Saturday, 2nd of April. Go on and register at bfm.my/health.
Hi, I'm Sharad Kutan, and welcome to the show that walks you through some fundamental concepts in the social sciences and humanities. Each week we try to reveal how various thinkers have grappled with theories and ideas, the better to understand how societies work. Now, today, we're going to be looking at how contemporary art practice might be conceptually informed. And we'll be looking at a specific exhibition, Kabad and Angin, that's at the Balai Seni Visual Negara. And to help us understand what lies behind this exhibition is Ong Jo Lin. She's a curator by profession and also the curator of the show.
Yes.
And also with her is Saifuddin Mamat, a.k.a. Pudin, or his nom de guerre, nom de plume, I don't know, nom de something, or namaglam, as we say in Malay, one of the 8 artists participating in the show. So let's begin at the start. Jolene, because has been here on Night School several times and is probably familiar to you as a curator, but I'm going to come back to her. But Pudin, you're new on Night School, and maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself as an artist. Where did you get your training, and what kind of art do you do yourself?
I graduated from UITM in 2006. From that year, maybe earlier than that, I already active in the scene and do different kind of like art, and I use a lot kind of different kind of medium. So it's not really focused on just like one medium.
So, but you paint, right? You quite actively paint.
Yeah, because I was trained in like more like traditional like art school where they have this like painting and drawing class and pre-making.
A focus on techniques.
Yeah, and then at the same time, I learned, from outside, you just like learn from books and see like what's happening in the contemporary art world. So I just like try to use all kind of medium like in my practice, yeah.
Right, so you're kind of imbibing all these influences. I remember one work that you did at Publica, which was quite interactive, and it was this huge portrait of the current prime minister, and which you invited, I think, viewers to kind of draw on, right?
Yes.
And it sort of ended up, if I didn't, this is not a spoiler, but I think it ended up basically as a black painting, because you either painted over it or you painted with the people who participated in it.
Yeah, the whole idea is still related to like how I was trained in traditional art school, and then at the same time I wanna it's kind of like manual, like how to teach people that how like now it's not about all this like image that being made by one particular artist. It's all about how like people reacted to the image and how like the whole the whole audience or the whole like society like shape what kind of like the ideas of the art. So it's like explaining
responding from the first day's audience.
So yeah,
not
it's like
so much to your
it's
original.
Like how democracy works actually. Like it's not at the center anymore. It's breaking up into these like pockets of like different kind of people do different kind of thing.
Right. So that's also become kind of a way of thinking about a lot of contemporary art, right? It's conceptual. It's not about this pure representation of reality out there that you might imagine a portrait might be, right? So a portrait is an attempt to capture the image of a person, right? Mm-hmm. A person's in as real or imagined a way as possible, right? So, okay, so that's your practice, Pudin. And of course, Jolene, when you put the show together, mm-hmm. how did you choose your artists? I mean, what were you looking for when choosing them? Maybe you have to say something about the objectives of the exhibition too.
Well, this is a good chance for me to go back to Pudin's practice, which is, he's also very sort of informed by punk ethos, am I right?
And it's very telling in your clothing.
Yeah, and there's also an element of interventioning into the social space in your practice. So I think that's one of the things that I was looking at. I wanted to get 8 artists who were from different disciplines, not just in terms of medium, but in terms of how they apprehend social issues or how they might want to apprehend something like a field trip to Kelantan. And so one of them is an architect with an interest in looking at the quirks of local architecture and architecture more as a practice of creating social space and social movement as opposed to buildings. That's Alex Lee. And then Pudin, we've covered. And then there's a photographer whose background is in psychology and her works tend to be a bit more introspective. And I think that's quite critical when you're looking at subjects surrounding spirituality and faith. And then a slightly more documentary approach from another photographer. And one is a bit more graphic design and maybe more accessible and romantic to the audience.
I mean, this idea of artists going on a field trip is actually not new at all, right?
No, think of
the old schools, the Nanyang school, and all that, you're going off to Bali, going off to Terengganu. And people came back with very often with sort of documentations of life in these different, maybe exotic locations, right? So they would be watercolors of women carrying, I don't know, fruit on their head or something like that. I mean, whatever it is, or fishermen and all. And those are very powerful also statements of a time. So were you in some ways, Jolene, trying to emulate that tradition of going out into the field and capturing something of reality?
Not at all. How this project came about, I mean, the full title is Kaba dan Angin, Excursus on Faith in Kelantan. Well, I think it should have been Excursus on Faith that we were looking at in Kelantan, as opposed to we're sort of studying Kelantan. And it was very important to use those exact words because the nuances behind Kaba dan Angin, you know, if you remove the dan, it's Kaba Angin, rumors. And this then comes back to the element of disbelief in faith and the element of how we justify our beliefs, you know, epistemology, and sort of comes back to faith as well. And Kaba also sort of means news, or in a more casual, informal way in the Malay language, it can also mean news from someone. Kabar tentang, you know, like Ahmad, how's he doing? And angin, of course, in Kelantan is not just angin as wind, but wind as in, as Carol Lederman has translated into inner winds or winds of desire, sort of related to the practices of mind putri and menorah.
Okay, so here it is. A bunch of artists go to Kelantan, perhaps because Kelantan has, at this point in time in Malaysian history, a reputation for being something different. It's a different space, it's other. But Pudin, you're actually Kelantanese. So in some ways, you're a Kelantanese in exile returning to Kelantan to view it. Is it, you know, this idea of viewing your own society from the outside, inside? What is the complexities of that dynamics that perhaps the others didn't have?
The difference is like for the first week in the program that I was like, they bring us to these like different religious spaces where if I was in Kelantan, I never like gonna experience that, you know, by myself. You know, when I visited like church and Buddhist temple and
they would have representatives talking to us.
And then the Temiah society community in Gomusang. So it's kind of a like different experience altogether, even though I'm Kelantanese. And on the second week, I kind of like revisited all the like space in the city in Kota Baru, when I used like to hang out a lot when I was a kid. So it's like a retracing my memory, and just like I still like feeling like an outsider because like it's totally a new space altogether. So it's totally like a different experience.
Right, you're from Tumpat in Kelantan, which you've described as the cradle of Malay culture, which is a pretty grand assertion. I mean, why would you say that about Tumpat?
Oh, actually, I saw it in billboard in Kota Baru, like, you know, like Kelantan as a cradle of like Malay culture.
But okay, I thought it was Serambi Mekah, wasn't that
that too?
The corridor to Mekah.
That billboard was like in front of the museum. And you know, in history, like, yeah, most of the play come from Kelantan, it's come from Tumpat area, where all this, like, very unique hybrid of, like, Kelantan and Thai influence. So if it's Wayang Kulit, from Wayang Kulit to Menorah, to Mak Yong, to Mai Putri, so most of the play, like, come from this area, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So we've got a bit of a scene. You have a largely non-Kelantanese group of artists going to Kelantan, except in the person of Pudin, who has this inside outside. Mm-hmm. You have a mix of both memory and also a kind of defamiliarization that perhaps has occurred as a consequence of you being away from Kelantan for so many years, right? So you're being reintroduced to your own culture, and, you know. But I'm sure you can kecik Klate. Can you still?
Yeah,
boleh. So we can, right? So, in which case, you probably have an advantage over many of the non-Kelantanese, right? So, okay, so that sets the scene. And so the idea was you were going to go there, experience something, and then the game, as it were, the rules that you had written right. for the artists. Could you elaborate on that,
yeah.
Jolene?
So this then comes back to what I said earlier about the title. And the title, Kabar dan Angin, encapsulates a certain tentativeness and a certain sort of speculative findings. And this was first due to the limitation of the project timeline. So we would only have 2 weeks. First week is unstructured. Second week was self-directed by the artist in Kelantan. That's a very short time, even for an artist residency. And sometimes if an artist is there for 3 months, how much can you really grasp of a place, and how much of a finding can you produce in any output, whether it's artwork or research. And then, so there was this short time in Kelantan and another only 20 plus days after the trip to sort of process this crazy amount of things and experiences and encounters into some form of output. And hence, this project says it's presenting an exhibition of artists' field notes to sort of capture that this is really just beginnings of lines of research that these artists may, some of them are sort of already going on. And also, this sort of mimics the limitation of time we have, most people might have, to encounter another place or an other in that large sense of the word. And what other meaningful ways can we remark on difference and similarity given this limitation in our daily life?
Why Kelantan? I mean, there are many spaces of difference. Mm-hmm. You know, you could just go to Kerry Island, you know, off the coast of Selangor for difference. Mm-hmm. And you could go into a plantation of Felda. You could go to Sabah, Sarawak.
You could go to East Malaysia.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And so, you know, why Kelantan? Why was there any urgency in trying to understand Kelantan?
This was actually the genius of your night school partner who's not here today, Ahmad Fuad Rahmat, who's part of Project Dialogue, and Yana Rizal, Project Dialogue as well. And we liked the idea of, I think they picked Kelantan because it's this is something I heard from Clive Kessler, who was here earlier in night school, is that there's something, they're often remarked upon in terms of their difference. And at the same time, the mass media also can be quite unfair in their representation of Kelantan. It is a place that conjures up strong emotions and judgments from the general population. But at the same time, how well do we know it? And then historically, the national border lines, I mean, Kelantan was a tributary state of the Siamese Empire. It was part of Langkasuka. It was relatively recently that even when the Japanese came, they sort of made a segregation between the northern states and then the sort of the Malaya states, Malay Peninsula states.
The federated and unfederated.
Yeah,
so this would include, the unfederated states would include mm-hmm. Kedah,
yes.
Pera,
so
and
Perlis, right? Complexities coming in as well. And how it also relates to us today, that this line I remember very clearly from Clive Kessler is that in the maybe 50s or so when PAS first came into power, Islam was a way of resisting, of a form of resistance to the modern Malaya project. And to other larger narratives. But now, it's become Islam is a way of, is used as a mode of transforming the nation. It is also used by the current ruling party. And so there's a certain coalescence. And I think, Pudin, you also said that there's no other alternative to this hegemony or perhaps a way of practicing one religion by the state.
Okay, so we're going to come back to all these questions, including one of my burning questions of what do artists do today, considering all the technology that is available for acts of representation. We're going to come back with Saifuddin Mamat, aka Pudin, as well as Ong Jolene, a regular on Night School, and myself, Sharad Kutin, on BFM 89.9.
You're still here. Good. Now, if you're listening to this podcast while on the treadmill, you're already off to a good start. If you're not, don't forget to join us at BFM's Health and Living Live 2016 on the 2nd of April. Find out how you can live a better, healthier life. Go on and register at bfm.my/health.
BFM 89.9, this is Night School. I'm Sharad Kutin. Ahmad Fuad Rahmat, who was mentioned in part one, is not here this week with us, but to join me and help me understand what artists want and what they're trying to do with the world is Ong Jolin. She's a curator with the show Khabar Dan Angin at Balai Seni Visual Negara, as well as one of the participating artists of this show, Saifuddin Mamat, a.k.a. Pudain. So I wanted to start with, you know, kind of moving away from the question of why Kelantan, which is how we ended part one, to the question of what do artists do when you have available to just about everybody these days a phone that has a camera or a phone that has a sketch pad? What are artists doing when everybody, it seems, can capture reality in some form? But I wanted to ask you, is it particularly challenging for you as an artist because all these technologies are available to everybody? I mean, what does an artist bring that's special to representing the world?
Yeah, it's very challenging because like you start to question like your role as an artist who assume to have this like expertise in, you know, image making, but now like everybody can make all like good images, you know. Doesn't have to be artists. And then I think as an artist you still need to be a part of it. And then all these like project that involve more on these like dimensions of like social media, I think artists like still have this role because like, for example, like everybody can make images, like everybody can speak, you know, words and speaking using words, but still like people who really like have this like formal studies of like how to manipulate images and how to really like put certain images to next to the other images, they still have this like differences between the like, people who, you know, just like posting image online.
I mean, Julian, can you give us a clue as to whether this is at all a question that is being posed in the art world? And if so, how do artists deal with this? As, you know, as Pudin put it, you know, this facility to create images is actually so universalized.
Yeah, and I think it is. And one of the, I hate to use the word trends, but one of the possibility that has opened up for artists and cultural producers is the archive. And particularly in communities or nations where their own writing of their history is relatively recent, the post-colonial countries, and in thinking about post-Cold War, which is so recent, or in Cambodia that has seen a generation wiped out by civil war that ended up in genocide. And so the artists are now able to not just make new image, but go back and think about things like historical denial, alternative narratives. And I think when everyone has the power of some form of documentary device in your hands, and then they're able to also obtain more nuanced oral records from people that might otherwise not be heard of when it comes to writing a big history book kind of project.
Well, I mean, what's interesting about what you said earlier, you know, you kind of drew an analogy there. We all use words, but there are some people who use words in particular ways and they're trained, right? So people who learn to be novelists or poets, and they're sensitive to certain nuances or fresh metaphors. I mean, you know, most of us are quite unthinking in our use of language. And so in terms of the image, you know, what was particularly important for you going to Kelantan? I mean, just coming back to the context again in this exhibition, because Kelantan itself, as you noted earlier, Pudin, is rich with its own cultural and artistic traditions. So what is a contemporary artist? And I'm going to assume that that's the way to describe all the eight artists. Yes. What do contemporary artists want to bring to this culturally rich landscape? I mean, you know, who are they really? Are they in dialogue with the arts of Kelantan? Are they just using Kelantan as a backdrop for their own concerns? You know, were these the kind of questions that you were asking or posing your fellow participants?
Yeah, like, because I think like the topic is like, it's very like very important and it's very large. And the whole project is like just like in 2 weeks, and you've been given like a month to like to produce a work. Yeah, you at first you feel like you wanna like tell everything, because you know, things to do with religion in Malaysia is like is one of the most important, you know, thing that need to be like talk about, and then need to be clarified, need to be elaborate. So you have this feeling, that urgency, that you know, you wanna tell the whole thing, and how like religions like impact your life in personal level, you know, in very deep level. But yeah, at the same time, like you have this limitation of time. You just like pick up whatever that you learn in that, or whatever, like, you know, in 2 weeks, and present it to the public. But to make it like to continue with it, you have to extend it beyond this like exhibition.
Yeah.
And then that's how like people do it nowadays. You know, is there's no more like these ideas about specific statement at specific time, and then it's that's it. It's always they have to continue beyond it. Just like, yeah.
I mean, but Julian, is that a cop out? I mean, are artists getting away with making tentative statements? You know, everybody's got a work in progress which they exhibit. You know, there's this kind of open endedness. I mean, is that a cop out?
I did think of that. I think we actually questioned ourselves too. Like, is this a cop out? Is this just our cop out in terms of accommodating the timeline, the crazy timeline given to us by our funders? And I think not, because the show has produced works that are able to sort of ask questions, perhaps slightly simpler than if you know, we embarked on a long-term research and there were complexities that came out through the works. And but you know, these simple communications and engagements with the audience, I wouldn't undermine them either. I mean, I've seen kids from Maktab Perguruan and MRSM coming to visit and engaging with works that are otherwise considered sensitive or taboo. Uncle Iman cut up a piece of prayer mat, the sajadah. She drew on it and she cut it up and made it into a slide puzzle. And I think here, the audience gave us benefit of the doubt, probably given a certain faith that because we're in a National Art Gallery, we must be doing something okay and permissible. And I think if we do continue, which we are talking about, at least a small number of us in the group to continue this research in more specific areas, then no, it's not a cop-out. But if it ends here, then yes. And it's also viewing the whole project, like the idea of going on a field trip and how this really is sort of coming back to most people's experiences when we are tourists, and how do you sort of make more meaningful or other ways of questioning what you see and hear in such short spans of time. And also the talks and the publication that will come out later, so it sort of discusses what came out during the show.
You said archive. Now, an archive I think of as a space where you document things, or you actually literally take things, and you're just not writing, see, because you could write and document something, but an archive would be actually a physical space which contains things, fragments from a place or from a time. Mm-hmm. Is that what you meant when you talked about an archive?
Yeah, like as in, artists are now looking back, digging up archives.
Oh, digging up archives. Yeah, kind so of discovering archives that already exist rather than creating archives.
Well, I suppose we are in a broad sense of the word, everything that we do. Of course, some are insignificant and we don't quite end up in the archive. But who knows? Maybe 10 years from now, some things we think are insignificant become part of some alternative narrative and gets dug up.
One of the things that I guess Night School has been about is intellectual discovery. That, you know, we look to concepts and theories as tools to rediscover the world that in some ways we encounter unproblematically on a daily basis. So for an artist like yourself, Pudin, I mean, when you went back to Kelantan, you said there was both this familiarity and the unfamiliar quality of your encounter with a space that you used to live in. What did you discover? I know there was limited time, but what did you discover this time around in this little project of yours?
I think I still like discover this. There's still like it's still the same place, you know, like there's these feelings of like something like freezing in time. Because when I used the boat from Kota Baru to Kampung Laut, it's still the same boat, same jetty, same river. So it's always like it's not always like something new. It's always like it's very familiar. It's the same thing. It's like it's never like, you know, getting like better service or whatever.
So over there, the past is not another country.
Yeah, I mean, so that's interesting because we come from a city. It's so, speed yeah. and change, right? So okay, so things frozen in time, you said.
Yeah, and then it's like bring your big questions about, you know, how to define, like, you know, progress or change, and what is change, you know, is it like big buildings or, you know, a better development, so, and what about like is space just like space as it is?
And Jolene, for you, what did you discover in this process?
That you could take excursions from an excursion, sort of hence the excursus in the title. And
an excursus is a kind of an argumentation, isn't it?
I think etymologically, it does come from it shares the same root as in Latin with excursion.
As in a trip.
Excursus would be notes and thoughts related to the main subject, but not quite. So could be kind of oblique and excursion out of it.
All right, okay.
The main subject.
Okay.
Yeah, because we started off with the working title was Spirituality and Religion in Contemporary Kelantan. And then we really realized that as much as we wanted to engage in a contemporary life where religion permeates everyday life due to the state moral investments and, how it's rich with Malay culture and how other minority faiths might live in this sort of largely like a 95% Muslim Malay majority, we realized we couldn't really do that in 2 weeks. So, but...
Well, you could just be a journalist, in which case you could do it. In fact, 2 weeks would be a lot of time.
But, you know, we realized we were parachuting in, and this is what Jason Tan remarked upon when he did a Kelantan special in Off the Edge in 2008. But he had the benefit of an expert, Farish Noor, interviewing Tok Guru Nik Aziz. So we weren't coming from this trying to give any form of definitive answer. Okay, it could be a cop-out. But what accidentally happened was a workshop environment, and I think that was very important that the eight of us plus the two curators ended up being in a workshop, and this is where things could go further elsewhere after this first exhibition. And through this workshop we realized that when you talk about religion and faith and spirituality, it is the attendant issues that hit you first. So when you're there for such a short time and you're meeting representatives of communities as opposed to an anthropologist who's able to really get into the community like 7, 10, 30 years. And so it's always attendant issues surrounding power and we try to sort of ask questions around that.
I don't know if anthropologists spend so much time, but okay. Not at least for their first bits of output. But okay, the other thing I think of when I think of an intellectual endeavour is the ability for contending ideas to find a space for dialogue, right? Not just an affirmation of your kind of view. Mm-hmm. Were there a lot of debates put in? Were there differences of opinion coming in this process? Did the pieces themselves, and I haven't seen the exhibition yet, do they speak to each other? Do they argue with each other?
Yeah, there's a few like sessions of like discussing about, you know, each of the ideas, but it's not that really like kind of deep discussions. Everybody's just like really busy, just focusing on their own like things and what they want to do with the, you know, with the artwork. Yeah.
Okay, so there wasn't. I mean, are you disappointed, Jolene, that there wasn't much more of a clash? I mean, did you
really? I thought there was a bit of. I mean, of course, it didn't go super deep, but like I think one heated argument was about who gets to call it sacred. What is the definition of sacred? I mean, it can be very different when you talk about pre-modern cultures or shamanistic cultures and the monotheistic religions that are very comfortable and adapted to sort of modern-day ideas. So we were talking about like, oh, you know, this Mayan Putri people, they don't appreciate how their own thing is sacred. Why do they even still do it? People are talking while the shaman is performing. And then I'm like, why is that considered not sacred based on, you know, who's... standard.
Yeah, looking at the participants, they seem disrespectful of something that presumes sacred.
Like the idea of talking during a ritual was considered, not treating it as something sacred.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Was that the only kind of debate? I mean,
That's the one that sticks out to me because I think I was involved in that one actively. But I think a lot of the works, particularly from the Malay artists, also draws back to their own personal experience. Kat Rahmat uses her own memory of being in sort of more religiously accepted Bomo rituals and transposes it with the Mayan Putri ritual, which doesn't quite fit so comfortably in the definition of what is Islamic in this country.
Putin, when are you going to take your own piece, when your own art? Where is it going to go? Is it complete in itself now, or does it have legs? Is it going to go somewhere?
I don't think it's complete, and I think like all this like issue related with this exhibition is still like going on because the exhibition like still there. And we still have like other programs like coming like this Saturday, which is gonna bring more into these ideas of like discussions and dialogues, and yeah, like, I'm gonna like bring all this like subject with these issues of religions and in Kelantan, and also like these ideas of like personal and you know and political like into like yeah, I mean maybe like the whole life because it's like. it's until like, it's off, you know. Like, yeah.
Right. So it's opened up an entire kind of new area for inquiry. Is that how you see it?
Yeah.
Okay. So Jolene, do you think you've succeeded in this? I mean, because I do think that it's not about making pretty pictures, right?
Yeah.
I mean, though pretty pictures are very nice, and I have nothing against putting pretty pictures on my wall, but. Was your objective, you know, successful? Were you successful in achieving your objective in this show?
I'm quite reticent to say yes and or no. Yes, in the sense that I like seeing slightly more this sort of what you might consider as taboo to discuss in religion, especially if it touches on Islam or a Malay person's perspective on how Islam can be, I mean, what is prescribed is very narrow here and doesn't have room for other interpretations. I'm glad that that happened and that took place in a place like the National Art Gallery where a lot of young Malay students do come and visit and they're actively engaging. They've left very positive notes on our journal board. But at the same time, dealing with the criticisms of, is this a cop-out? I think we are still continuing to grapple with it, and I hope to tackle it more during the artist talk on the 12th, this Saturday, moderated by Yap Sao Bin. Brickbats are welcome.
Well, I look forward to it. I'm certainly going to be there. And I think perhaps that's going to be the one recommendation that we need, today at the end of this show, which is please see the exhibition. It is Kaba Dan Angin at Balai Seni Visual Negara, which is off that rather large road.
Jalan Tun Razak,
near the Titiwangsa Lake, isn't it?
Next to Istana Budaya.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Get a look, you know, if you've never been to Balai Seni, it's really worth going down to the Balai. It's got some interesting stuff and it's had some interesting exhibitions over the years.
There's another good one going on now. Mapping certain history of Malaysian art, 50s.
Oh, right. Okay. So some bit of art history as well.
Yes,
okay. And I seen a brilliant exhibition on photography in Malaya, by, I think it was Alex Moore, I think it was. Beyond the exhibition, Jolene, is there something else you'd like to recommend?
Yes. When I realized that this would be very much hinging on a field trip, I would recommend the book that I referred to. That helped me in thinking how we can approach a field trip more meaningfully and in treating the people we visit, our host, not just as subjects, and in thinking about, you know, remarking on others and difference and similarity would be Field, an Itinerant Inquiry Across the Kingdom of Cambodia. Just Google it.
And who's the author?
It's based on a field trip art project, but non-output based, produced by, one of the producers is Sasa Basak Gallery in Cambodia.
Right, non-output based. I love that. That's the idea of like going for a holiday. Non-output based. Putin, do you have a recommendation?
There's a program happening now in Findas and Raksasa Print Serian Berhad. So it's an animation program happening for 1 week, the whole week until 13 March. Lots of like animation from mostly from Europe, So the whole week until 13 March. So, yeah.
Okay, so maybe we could post that on our Facebook page. It's BFM Night School. And if you have any questions for Jolene or Pudin, you can email us and we'll forward the emails to you. It's bfmnightschool@gmail.com. But if you're on Twitter, as I am, at Sharad Kutin, you can tweet. Jolene, are you on Twitter?
Yes, on Jolene.
Okay, and Pudin, are you on Twitter?
No.
No. Are you on Facebook?
Yeah.
Okay, you're on Facebook. Do you want to share your Facebook with the rest of the world? You can say no.
Yeah, no.
Okay, well, there you have it. That was Pudin and Jolene. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm Sharad Kutin. This is Night School on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.